On this episode of Upcoming Attractions, we're talking the Oscar nominations. We also have trailers for Jurassic World Dominion, Nope, Elvis, and more. Also, our film discussions for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Being the Ricardos, and Eyes of Tammy Faye. All this and more on Upcoming Attractions. G'day, gang. Welcome back to Upcoming Attractions. I'm your host, Matt Vella, and with me, as always, are my co-host, Jesse.
Hey guys, how are we?
And 80.
Hey, everyone.
And yay, we're all here. First of all, congrats to Jesse. He's in a new space, a new studio, a new house. So, round of applause.
Thank you. There's no cool shit in the background now. It's just a plain fucking white wall. So, if you're watching the video version,
love it.
So,
yeah. Yeah, for everyone at home listening via audio, just close your eyes and imagine a white wall. And you've pretty much got close to what we're going for there.
Yeah.
guys, let's jump into the Oscars. I know particularly, Adrian, you are a big fan of the Oscars. You're always looking forward to it.
I am. Well, I used to like have Oscars days at my home, remember? And some people, like, I would put in leave at work to watch it live.
Oh my gosh. That's so cool. I remember like once I took a day off work and I came and there was like a bunch of people there. It was fun.
Yeah. And we had a bet and a money pool and everything.
Yeah.
So
I would not be placing bets this year just because I've noticed, like, well, I'm happy with a lot of the nominations. A lot of the movies I haven't seen. So I feel like a little bit of a noob. What about you, Jesse? Are you a big fan of the Oscars?
Not exactly. I mean, I like seeing like the main ones, like Best Picture and Best Actor and Actress, but the rest I just don't really care about as much. I feel for me that I'm just not that interested. And also a lot of the films that I've loved over the years that I thought were brilliant and fantastic have been snubbed by the Oscars. So I'm not as much of a fan, but, you know, I do like seeing some of the main categories and knowing, like, who, you know, like I've done pulls for them at work as well. For some of my previous jobs, I've been involved in pulls for it, but, not as into it, but, yeah.
Now, I get you. I feel like a lot of the films that are nominated, a lot of the time it's the artsy-fartsy ones that also have a big budget, which is kind of weird. It can't decide. It's like they like indie films, but it's like famous people doing.
Yeah,
it's like, and it feels a little outdated sometimes. I feel like blockbusters sometimes deserve a little bit more love.
I agree.
And there's a lot of
Titanic was the, you know, like the leading picture, or like those days when it was really glam and big.
Yeah,
it's like, not really like that anymore.
Like, I get excited when, for example, a movie like Dune gets in because it's a very not Oscar-y type film, but it's a big, you know, popular audience film. So when that happens, there's a little bit inside me that cheers them on. But I do think the Oscars are important. I do think it is the thing to make note of is, like, a lot of people will criticize the Oscars because they don't pick, you know, Spider-Man as best picture or whatever. But you got to remember, at the end of the day, like, it's not a popular vote among audiences. That's Kids Teen Choice Award, you know? The Oscars is the high-ups, the people with lots of money, the people with lots of experience, and they're voted on among their peers. So I don't expect someone like you and me to be voting for best cinematography because we're not cinematographers. We know we can go, that looks cool, but we don't know how to operate the camera that does it. The people who are voting in the Academy, hopefully a lot of them do. So, you know, shout outs to like the really artsy ones who are, especially ones that are innovating, pushing the medium forward. Let's just have a quick open discussion about how do you guys feel about it? Were there any snubs that snubbed out for you? Were there any surprises? How do you feel about this year's Oscars in general? What do you reckon?
I can't off the top of my head think of any snubs. I actually think it's a very different bunch of films that are nominated, which is really cool and really interesting. Like you said, Dune's not a typical Oscar film, but I'm so happy that it's nominated for the biggest award of the night. I will get on to actually a snub I just thought of then, but I'm really happy about that. I've only seen about a quarter of the film so far. My goal is always to watch them all before it airs. So I think from what I know, at least about all of them, they all deserve to be there, probably except for Don't Look Up. That's kind of random for me. I think a lot of people would agree with that.
Yeah, I think Don't Look Up is a bit of a swing and a miss, I reckon.
Oh.
I feel like the people who like Don't Look Up, the people who say they like Don't Look Up, they're the ones who like the message, or they like the, but at the end of the day, it's like Don't Look Up sells itself as a comedy film. And yeah, if you go to someone, hey, what's your favorite joke in Don't Look Up? No one has an answer for that because
yeah, no, it may Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill throwing the nuts and drinks at Jennifer Lawrence. I like that part.
That was pretty funny. That was pretty funny. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like that movie, it succeeds at delivering a message, but it kind of fails as a comedy for me. Not that I'm trying to call what's his name? The director.
Adam McKay
a failure, because I love Adam McKay. But yeah. I'll tell you a big miss for me. Denis Delavue is not nominated for Best Director.
That's literally what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Dune's got like 100 nominations and not directing. Like, who do you think put all that together, dude? Yeah. Like, if I was to give one award to Dune, ignoring everything else, I would probably... Maybe visual effects, but next would be directing, because that's for me the best part of that film.
Agreed, agreed. Super weird.
There's a few other things that stick out to me, but before I get into Jesse, do you have any other opening thoughts or comments about this year's Oscars?
I think they got the main important ones there. There's a couple of like films that I thought, I don't know if you'll call it a snub, but I reckon they may should have gotten a mention, but I don't know. Most of it's pretty good. I would have thought that Bradley Cooper in Nightmare Alley would have been nominated for Best Actor, because I actually thought he did a pretty good job. But besides that, like Denis Villeneuve...
I was going to say, yeah, just like a lot of people would agree with you and say it's one of his best performances.
Well, yeah, that's right.
A little bit of a surprise.
I thought it was one of his best performances. And Denis Villeneuve is not nominated as Best Director, I thought was pretty bizarre, because that film was so, like, the scope of it was just amazing. And he's the one that was the mastermind behind it. So it just seemed a bit, but anyway. Matt, this is me and the Oscars. I mean, this is what they do. This is what they do to me.
That's what they do. Like, that's always the big talk. Like, people don't go, oh, I'm glad he or she got a nomination. No, they go, oh, they snubbed this person. There's always a snub. There's always 100%. Someone missing out.
I was going to say, though, guys, like, it doesn't really matter who else is in the Best Picture category. It's going to go to Power of the Dog, whether anybody likes it or not. It's been, absolutely, it's been the winner at literally every single award show.
It's a great movie, but...
If it didn't win and someone else took it home, I think everyone would be really shocked.
Because see...
oh my God, imagine if Don't Look Up won.
No. It's not even a possibility.
I've seen 4 of the movies in Best Film. And yeah, honestly, I'd have to probably give it to Power of the Dog out of those 4 that I'm seeing on the, out of the ones I've seen in Best Picture nominations. Not necessarily it's not necessarily my favorite film, but I think it's the most well-written, well-made film.
Logically likely to win. Yeah.
Well, totally. It's got the most noms, so it's got a good chance. I think if anything was to give it a run for its money, I know West Side Story has a lot of nominations. There's a lot of hype around Licorice Pizza. There's a lot of hype around Belfast. I really need to watch Belfast.
I'd say Belfast. If anything's going to beat Power of the Dog, it's going to be Belfast. And that will be the, if that happens, that will be the left field unexpected moment of the evening. So we'll see.
Well, I think it's not one of the top five categories, but I think it's without a doubt, it's obvious he's going to win best international feature, and that's Drive My Car. That has a surprisingly large amount of nominations in other categories. And it's in the international feature that has that. So I think I want to check it out, but apparently it's a 3-hour character piece. And that's a lot of reading for me. So I don't know if I'm going to watch Drive My Car. But I hear it's fantastic. Something I haven't seen, but I'm rooting for it, is I really want to see it, but like I'm low-key rooting for Will Smith for King Richard. That looks great. But
the,
I think
the contenders this year are really, they're all equally strong. Like it's actually really hard to pick logically and with your heart of who's going to take it out.
I feel like it could be Denzel's year. But Benedict Cumberbatch has a good chance. I tell you, I don't think, and I feel like the people are going to get mad at me, but like, I don't think Andrew Garfield's going to get it.
I'm one of those people. How dare you? He was amazing.
He was amazing. I love him. And if you, what I love about him too is like, if you look at the guy he actually played, he looks like him. And I think it's incredible he learned to sing for this film. But
I know what you mean. Like, I get it. Like, I just really love competition. Yeah.
There's a lot of tough competition. Look, if a Spider-Man actor won the Oscar, like the Spider-Man in me would be really excited. But speaking of Spider-Man, I have a hot take. Looking at the visual effects category, here's my hot take. I love Spider-Man No Way Home, but it does not deserve an Oscar nomination for visual effects. It is, there are some really bad VFX shots in that film. Like so bad. It was incomplete when they released it. And a few weeks into release, they actually updated some of the CGI.
I didn't know that.
It hasn't been widely reported, but people have noticed differences between the early screenings and later screenings. So they literally like had to improve the CGI midway through. And even in the film, there are just some shots that don't look like they're, they could have been composited better. There are some shots where I feel like all the MCU Spider-Man films, I feel like has had a bit of weird CGI Tom Holland suit.
Would you have to Dune?
Yeah, I think if anyone's going to, I think Dune without a doubt. Look, No Time to Die, I don't even recognize the special effects. So maybe I've missed something really big. And maybe that's a reason for it to win. It's done such a good job, I haven't really noticed it.
Good point.
But Dune, I think, no one holds... Like, I wouldn't even put Spider-Man next to Dune. Like, that's how big of a gap it is in CGI quality.
Yeah, it's massive.
Don't tell Kevin Smith that. He'll fucking chuck a hissy fit.
Oh, my God.
Kevin Smith is coming to my house right now.
Yeah,
he's coming me out in Fatman's Fatmobile, and he's gonna beat me to death with the script of Clerks 400 or whatever it is.
What a way to go! That would actually be a kind of cool way to die.
Death by Kevin Smith. He's gonna beat my ass, and then he's gonna make a podcast about it. That's what he's gonna do. Nah, I love Kevin Smith. I love Spider-Man. But yeah, look, moving on, like, so we talked about Best Picture. We talked a little about directing. Actress, Adi, you, on our previous episode, you were pretty not a big fan of someone's performance.
Oh, look, I'm not, okay. I'm
Kristen
not...
Stewart and Spencer.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she was fine. Like, she did great, but I don't think that she compares to her peers in this category. I personally think that Jessica Chastain had the strongest performance of everyone this year, and probably following her, I'd say Penelope. But we will talk about Eyes of Tammy Faye later, but she was mind-blowingly explosive in that film. And I think it's sort of between them two, but I do have a feeling that Kristen will take it out. And if she, I don't know.
What about Nicole?
She just sort of spent. Nicole was really good. She was great. Well, she's great in everything though, but there were, I don't know, like she's always so consistently good, but she's definitely had way stronger performances. If you do end up watching The Eyes of Tammy Faye, you'll see what I mean, because she plays another real person, Tammy Faye, from her teens right into the like final stages of her life. And you watch the entire roller coaster that is her life. And she has incredible range, a lot of breakdowns, really fucking intense acting. And it's, I just don't think Kristen's was anything compared. And I think Nicole was great, like technically flawless, but it wasn't as explosive. So that's my opinion.
Fair enough. I've heard, I saw a review somewhere that called it a career-defining moment for Nicole. But I haven't seen the film. I can't comment on it. I think the trailer was good.
I can name like five career-defining moments for her because she's pretty great.
She does have a great career. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Look, I sort of touched on it before, but actor in a leading role. I haven't seen it, but I am rooting for Will Smith. I just feel like it's his time. Maybe the Academy agrees. Do either of you have a pick for best actor?
Well,
you go, Jesse.
Out of the five of them, I've only seen Benedict Cumberbatch's Phil Burbank in *Power of the Dog*, and he was fantastic in that role. He absolutely nailed it. The accent was like a little bit touchy, but besides that, I could not fault him at all. He was brilliant. So I haven't seen any of the other performances. And as I said earlier, I would have preferred that Bradley Cooper at least get a nomination because I thought he deserved it. For Nightmare Alley, but I think I wouldn't be surprised if Benedict Cumberbatch won the Oscar.
Yeah, like I haven't seen it. I wouldn't be surprised either because it's a lot of nominations for that film, but he kind of like leads that film, right? Like around him. So he's sort of the flag, he's sort of like steering the ship in a way. What are you, AD? Are you betting money on any of these actors?
So every year I like to make a list of who I would love to win personally and then who the Academy is pretty much definitely going to pick. And I think that Benedict is probably up there in both categories for me. I think he is actually going to win. I think he'll take it home. I don't think that there's... Oh, it sucks because, you know, like... A lot of people are rooting for Will Smith as well. Like this is also has also been described as a career defining point for him. So it would be so amazing if he just swooped in and won, or even if Denzel did, or even Andrew, like even Javier was great. But I think something tells me Benedict is going to take it home. I think Power of the Dog is going to be another, like a 10 Oscars in one night situation.
Yeah. Benedict's career right now is kind of insane. He's doing so many incredible, like even like the ones he doesn't get nominated for. He's done like a lot of like Oscar-y Beatty type films, but he always crushes it. Even if I personally don't love his American accent, but on top of all that, like he's Doctor Strange and after the next Doctor Strange movie, he's going to be even more of a household name. You watch.
He's on fire. Absolute fire.
He can do no wrong. I think I'm just rooting for Will Smith because, one, I find him a very likable guy. Mm. And the movie, the story of that film looks really great. But also, he's just done so many crap movies lately. And I'm hoping this is a comeback for him. I'm hoping this inspires him to do good movies. what else can we touch on?
There's
production design, cinematography. That's a big one. The nominations for cinematography. Yeah, you got Dune, Nightmare Alley, Power of the Dog, Tragedy Macbeth, and West Side Story. Are we all thinking Dune?
If it doesn't, I'll be really surprised.
I mean, God, like, I don't know. Power of the Dog and Nightmare Alley had pretty good cinematography. I know Dune had fantastic cinematography. But they did as well. Power of the Dog, because Power of the Dog is very, you know, open landscapes and, you know, it's set in a rural area. Mm. So, you know, cinematographically, you have a great chance of capturing, you know, the environment. And, you know, the environment's kind of its own character in a sense. And I thought the cinematography in that film was pretty good. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't know. Possibly Dune.
I haven't seen West.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't seen West Side Story personally, but you know, I'd imagine like from the trailer, there are so many crazy dance numbers with so many extras. I'd imagine they'd probably have some interesting stuff there. Plus, it's Spielberg, you know. So I'm interested to see that. But for now, my money is on Dune. I wouldn't be surprised. Power of the Dog is nominated for so many things. Yeah. It's like throw a dart at a dartboard and wherever it lands, it's probably going to win an award there. So, yeah.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, there's not really a lot others that are left that are really worth talking about.
Yeah.
Original song was kind of surprising, I would say, just because we had so many musically driven films this year, but you know, Tick, Tick, Boom was not eligible for any of these.
It's adapted. Yeah, that's true.
But then on top of that, the song they picked for Encanto
wasn't like one of the big ones, right? That's what a lot of people said.
Yeah, I'm really honest because I only watched it once. I don't even remember that song. I'm like, really? Over the Pressure song, over Bruno, we don't talk about Bruno, was like number one in the iTunes charts at one point.
I like you all know this. Yeah. I wasn't even like that much of a fan, but even I think that one should have taken the place of the one that was nominated because it, I don't know.
Yeah, so there's some surprises there. And I personally wasn't really a giant fan of Billie Eilish's song for No Time to Die.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just a personal thing. I'm not a Billie Eilish fan. I'm sure she's a great person. actually, let's touch on real quick. I want to touch on something. Best animated feature film. Mm-hmm. Huge year for Disney. They have got three of the. Well, you know what? Disney always have pretty much owned this category. May as well be best animated. It may as well be called best Disney film. This category, but ladies and gentlemen. If The Mitchells versus the Machines doesn't win Best Animated Feature Film, I'm going to fucking riot.
I haven't seen it. Are you actually going to riot? It?
There's a dog in it that looks a lot like your dog in real life. You would love him.
Okay. Yeah.
Guys, Mitchells versus the Machines is probably one of my favorite films of the year.
Wow.
On Netflix. I'm going to watch it.
It's made by the studio that did Into the Spider-Verse. But they had a very unique art style. This takes that to another crazy extreme. It's this, and it's really modern. Like they have a lot of themes about social media and stuff, and they work into the art style in really innovative ways. I think we could be like, this could be a film that like really inspires the younger generation of filmmakers growing up of like how to maybe express about technology and stuff. And it's a really beautiful family story. It's such a great script. It's really funny. I really love Mitchells versus the Machines. If that loses to fucking Luca, like I love Luca. I like Luca, but I love Mitchell versus Machines. And I like Encanto, but it's not the same. Mitchell versus Machines is honestly maybe in my top five of the year. I love it.
I think is up in the air. Literally any of them could take it out because even Raya and the Last Dragon was quite good. And they all have, I think, a really strong standing. So it could be anyone's bet.
Yeah, I haven't seen Flea, but I have heard good things as well. I just realized something. Here's someone that got may have been a bit of a snub. Lady Gaga for Best Actress.
Oh, like, yes.
I haven't seen...
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen House of Gucci, but apparently she's won awards like across the board at like award shows and stuff. So it's really surprising she wasn't nominated.
She should have been, she should have gotten a nomination without a doubt. She should have gotten a nomination. Yeah. I didn't even realize that. I didn't even see that. So
yeah that, I did see that's that quite around surprising. It.
Also, I got to say as well, I thought that Kate Blanchett in Nightmare Alley should have also gone, because I thought she's quite good in Nightmare Alley as well. And she didn't get a nomination for Best Supporting Actress. So, yeah.
That's a good point. I'm just looking at some other categories now that we weren't going to talk about. But under makeup and hairstyling, I really liked Cruella.
Where's Gold? Gold should be
that.
In there.
That was amazing.
Yeah, Gold's not there, but they do have Dune. They got House of Gucci, Eyes of Tammy Faye, and I can't believe Coming to America. That's the Eddie Murphy one, right?
Yeah, it is. It's the Eddie Murphy one. Like when you think about it, the Royal Penis sequel. there was actually quite a lot of makeup. So
yeah, I guess good for them. Let me. Okay, again, not a top. Four. I'm sorry. I'm just going through them now because I'm having fun with this.
It's addictive. Honestly,
can we just talk about the elephant in the room? The main.
Oh, Jared Leto.
No. The main host of the Oscars this year.
Oh.
All right. So this year it's
Amy Schumer,
and then it's also
Wanda Sykes and Regina Hall.
You're not a fan?
I don't really know Regina Hall that well. Wanda Sykes, I don't have a problem with. It's just Amy Schumer. I'm not an Amy Schumer fan at all. I do not understand her popularity. I just don't get it.
She's
just very cringy, and I don't know. She's just not funny.
I would
cringe for her. Like, definitely, that's part of her style. But I think it just depends on the content. Like, if it's a film or if it's stand up, I think it's actually really different, her styles.
I actually kind of like her. I haven't seen her do stand up in a while. I think Trainwreck was pretty good, but
I love that movie.
I would also say like Read the Room Oscars, because like I would say Amy Schumer is without a doubt maybe the most hated comedian in the world right now. The most hated that doesn't have a scandal against her.
Okay.
There are a lot of comedians who are Me Too'd and stuff, but Amy Schumer has been accused of stealing so many jokes, well, mostly her writing stuff for her show Inside Amy Schumer. I feel like any video she's in, the comment sections are mostly misogynist and sexist against her. But like when those type of people talk about unfunny comedians, the first one they spring up is her. And I feel like she's a bit of a punching bag.
Yeah, I definitely think she is.
I don't think she fully deserves all the hate personally, but I will say, like, it's like, dude, this is the Oscars. You can get someone with a bigger star power, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe get someone who's been in more films. Like, I think she's been like two or three major Hollywood productions that I can think of.
Yeah.
I know she got
random. It's a very random choice because it's not like she had something major out last year, or you know what I mean? Like
she was attached to the new Barbie movie for ages, and then once she was unattached to that, now all the news is coming out about it. Now it's getting all the other cast attached. So
yeah,
I just feel like I like the idea of having three female hosts. They have done three hosts before.
Yeah.
But I think you could have picked some more people with more star power, or maybe some
more likable.
Yeah.
Like ruthless, like Gervais or something. You know?
Gervais has done a lot. Look, my favorite part of the Oscars is often the opening monologue. Or song number if they have it. But look, you could get someone like, I know she's not as famous, but like Nikki Glaser or Whitney
Cummings.
Cummings, yeah. They're both savage, and they both have done, like, they've done roasts and so many things as well. But then again, I guess that's the same problem. It's like they don't have star power.
Yeah, they don't really have the star power to. I don't know. I just feel like there should be so many other better options than Amy Schumer. Like, I don't, like, I'm not, I, for me, it's more of like an indifference. I just don't find her funny. She's just not for me. And just to pick her for the, because I know a lot of people dislike her, like thoroughly dislike her. To pick her for the Oscars, it just seems like you're really not doing yourself any favors. If, you know, because the Oscar viewing numbers are already waning. They're already in massive decline. But also,
why would Amy want to do this? Like, anyone who does the monologue at the Oscars puts a target on their back as it is.
I feel like that's part of her brand though, you know? Like, maybe going to let her run wild and pull a female Gervais because she can be like that. So hopefully we'll be pleasantly surprised and she'll throw out some jaw-dropping. I love watching the celebrities' reactions. Anyone who laughs when they get ripped on, I'm like, we would be friends. And then the people that sit there in absolute horror because they've been called out, like, I'm like, oh, I live for this stuff.
Yeah. Look, to play devil's advocate, talking about the hosts, I feel like it's nice to have a change of pace because a lot of the times the hosts are predictable. It's either a talk show host. It's always one of the Jimmys or something, or Seth Meyers. I've seen host a million, or it's always Tina Fey and Amy Poehler as a duo. And look, I love all these hosts. Or I think Hugh Jackman hosted.
Indeed, with the Golden Globes
or Oscars. That was fine. But you know, sometimes you can get people who blow it. Like James Franco notoriously ate shit when he. I don't think he hosted, he just presented, right?
It was him and Anne Hathaway did it together year. That was the one. I remember now.
He's copped so much shit for that because he just looked stoned and half asleep.
And I think she did too because she was, in whatever he was lacking in energy, she tried to make up for it, three times the amount. So it was just awkward and like a strange high school production. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah. Look, we'll see what happens. At the end of the day, it's just the person in between stuff. There was one where like they kept switching hosts like in every segment. I think that was
last year.
Yeah, and I that was just boring to me. But anyways, look, to wrap things up, I want to just talk about a few more categories. Film editing. I think between us, we've seen nearly all these. Don't Look Up, Dune, King Richard, Tick, Tick, Boom, The Power of the Dog. I feel like if Don't Look Up might have a chance because the editing, like a lot of Adam McKay's film, that's what shines pretty strong. But Tick, Tick, Boom, I think was well edited too. It's a lot of options there.
So many.
Let's just talk about supporting actors and then just wrap this up and go on to the trailer, shall we?
Sounds good. All right.
Actor in a supporting role. We got, I'm so bad at names. Sirian Hines in Belfast, Troy Kotsur in Coda, Jesse Plemons in Power of the Dog, J.K. Simmons in Being the Ricardos, Cody Smith-McPhee in The Power of the Dog. So there's two for Power of the Dog. Yes. Jesse, has anyone who's seen Power of the Dog, who would you give it to, Jesse or Cody? I know we're probably pretty biased with this.
Probably Cody. Only because I felt like Jesse Plemons is. I could see either of them, but if you put a gun to my head, I'd probably say Cody. Only because Jesse Plemons is the character is so subtle and subdued and you don't really, his character isn't as memorable as Cody McPhee's character is. Not say he didn't put on a good performance. He put on a great performance, but just that his character was just so subdued and nice and pleasant. And there wasn't, he's very charismatic, but there wasn't like you know, much to take away from it. I mean, do you agree, Adi, from when you saw it? That
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think they're both great.
Oh, I forgot you saw it. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. I agree.
Yeah, I thought Cody Smith McPhee was a bit more memorable. He had, I think he played like a very lispy, you know, young guy with kind of psychopathic tendencies. And I think
he had more to bury. Like, his character had more to bury. Yeah,
it's basically a matter of fact that Cody Smith McPhee had a lot more to play with in his character than Jesse Plemons did. And it showed. So.
And then with actress in a supporting role, we've got Jessie Buckley, The Lost Daughter, Adriana DeBrose, West Side Story, Judy Dench in Belfast, I Can't Talk Today, Kristen Dunst in The Power of the Dog, and Anna June, alias for King Richard. Is anyone leaning a certain way? I'm hearing a lot of hype over Kirsten Dunst.
I haven't seen them all, which is the annoying part. So I can't really say heaps, but I suppose Kirsten does have a very high chance. I love her as well. Like, we all grew up watching her on screen, and I feel like for her, finally, because she's a very versatile actress. She's just so naturally amazing at it. I think I'd be beyond happy if she won for her performance. Mm.
And last comment, as for original screenplay, I won't go through it all, but I'll just say, actually, out of all the five choices, two of them are just like, what the fucks to me. Don't Look Up, because the worst part about that film is the script, is the story. Yeah. Like, the actors are great. I would even say the directing is great. I think the... everything is great except the script. So I can burn it. And then and Licorice Pizza, from my understanding, some very controversial themes that I believe involve statutory rape or pedophilia or something like that. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, like, there's a romance with like a huge age gap. And it's not like the point of it is like, this is bad. It's just like the director's like, accept this. So I've heard a lot of backlash against that film, and that comes down to the screenplay.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I've heard more controversy. I haven't actually heard much praise for that film. I've just heard the controversy in the headlines.
No way. I've heard the opposite. That's so interesting. Maybe Facebook algorithm just really wants me to go buy a ticket.
Maybe. I could be trapped in some weird echo chamber, but... yeah. Look, anyways, guys, that's our thoughts on the Oscars nominations. Can't wait to see the full thing. We're going to do our homework. We're going to try and watch as many as we can before. I'm actually running really far behind compared to you two, so I'm gonna catch up. Maybe I'll watch Power of the Dog tonight. But anyways, guys, we're here today talking about trailers for movies. We got a few big ones coming up. Let's start with Jurassic World Dominion. Jesse, I know you're a big Jurassic Park
fan. I knew you're gonna go to me first.
And what hot take
is he gonna have on this?
Well, what's your reaction? What do you think of Jurassic World Dominion?
If I'm gonna be honest, very mixed. I don't have high expectations. I really don't. I just thought Fallen Kingdom was such a fucking dumpster fire of a movie. It almost completely ruined the franchise for me. It was, no offense, Matt, but it was kind of like, remind me of The Last Jedi of the Jurassic franchise.
Wait, for which one?
It was The Last Jedi of the Jurassic franchise.
No, but which one? Fallen Kingdom?
Yes, yeah.
I would agree. In fact, I don't know, but Fallen Kingdom's even worse than that, I would say. Fallen Kingdom's
pretty bad.
Fallen Kingdom is disastrous. It's terrible.
Very mixed. I'll tell you about the things I liked first. By far the thing I liked most about this trailer is seeing the original three Alan Grant, Ellie Sattler in Malcolm. That was by far the best part, seeing them three back together again. I liked some of the scenery of the dinosaurs in the towns and stuff. That was pretty cool. That's probably about it. The rest of it, I was very... Some of the CG I thought looked pretty trash. I thought some of the CG in the original trilogy looked better than the CG in this trailer, if I'm going to be brutally honest. Like, especially the raptor Blue and her child. Some of the CG of her looked really bad, like really average, in my opinion. I see Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard's characters, and now I just kind of get annoyed when I see him on screen. I'm like, can someone just please kill these two off, please? I'd rather just go back to Ellie Sattler and Alan Grant. I really just cannot stand them.
That should be the opening. That would be an incredible opening.
I'm very interested to see how they do this with the dinosaurs in like the normal world. I'm very interested to see how they do it. But yeah, I really do not have high expectations, and I'm not as excited for it as I probably should be, being I'm such a massive fan of the Jurassic Park movies, the original trilogy. So yeah, low expectations, but I'll be interested to see what they do with it. So
What about you, Eddie?
I have no hope for these movies anymore. I just don't even... There's no expectation. There's no raised bar. It's just a matter of, will I force myself to sit through this when I know I'm going to be... There's a 90% chance of me being disappointed. I think Jesse's right. Kill them off. Let the dinosaurs take over. Yeah, fuck it.
They're so fucking annoying. Just give me... I just want the original three. Just they're so so much better, so much grander and more realistic. And you bought them as paleontologist and as a chaos science, you know, engineer, you know, whatever you classify Ian Malcolm as, a scientist or chaos theorist or whereas Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt's like, oh, look at me, I'm cool, I talk to raptors, and you know, oh, raptors, you know, it's like, dude, who are you? You're a fucking cowboy or some shit. Like,
dude, go home, just go home.
I'm
actually cautiously optimistic. Look, but here's why. This movie is what I wanted them to fucking do in the first place. This is what I wanted Jurassic World 1 to be. I wanted dinosaurs out in the world, as it was hinted in Jurassic Park 3. I wanted the original cast to return in supporting roles, at the very least. And I wanted all three of them to be together, because they haven't reunited since the first Jurassic Park, all three of them. So this film is finally giving me what I want. Here's where I'm concerned. Also, there's a scene where there's a dinosaur that has feathers.
Yes.
I don't know if we've seen that yet. That's kind of cool. Yes. So slightly more accurate. And I think some of these action set pieces, like the whole doing a globe-trotting adventure, getting dinosaur. I think there's one where like they're in like Rome.
Was the one scene where I was like, oh, that looks actually all right. Because I don't know about you guys, but some of the scenes of dinosaurs the CGI looked pretty cheap in some of the scenes.
I thought in the snow they looked a bit, how's it going? Yeah. But look, that's what you get with these type of films. It would be, I think, towards the end when you have that dinosaur with the big frilly thing, it looked like they were doing some practical stuff there. Yeah, it looked like they were using some practical stuff, but it's like, why not more of that? I don't know. But my concern is that the original cast won't be in it for long or in a major way, because we only seen two scenes in this trailer where they're there, but it feels so good to see them all standing together.
It does. That does. That's the best part.
Yeah. I'm cautiously optimistic. This is what I've wanted them to do with the franchise for a while. On multiple parts, it's in terms of both plot and characters. So my fingers are crossed. And I'm really hoping they learnt from their mistakes with Fallen Kingdom. And I'm getting the impression like maybe they did. I could be wrong. I hope I'm not. But also just the tone of this trailer, again, it's the trailer, not the movie, but the tone seems more, it's not like the original Jurassic Parks, but it's closer. Like the first one felt like a roller coaster in terms of like it was overly bright colors. It was like really too friendly. And the second one was just a mess of a script. It had too much going on.
Are we talking about the Jurassic World or Jurassic Park?
Yeah, Jurassic World. Sorry. Yeah, like Fallen Kingdom was a total messy, horrible. It's basically two films sticky taped together.
It's just such a shit movie.
Yeah. Look, as long as we don't have any cringe scenes where Chris Pratt's trying to roll away from lava,
oh my god!
If we get that, and then we're dramatically improving.
Maybe if it was 2 full hours of him rolling away from lava, I would not be as disappointed. I think that would be really interesting.
it would loop around to like being ironic.
At least I'd be entertained then. It'd be entertaining.
I'd get
something out of it. Comedy.
He'd be like, is he going to stop? No, he's still rolling.
2 hours of rolling from lava.
Chris Pratt in 2 hours of rolling from lava.
Rated PG-13.
Oh god,
Rob Schneider.
Gotta love South Park. Guys, let's move on to our next trailer. This one will be exciting. I'm talking about Nope, written directed from Jordan Peele. Are there any Jordan Peele fans out there between the three of us? I'm a huge
fan. I like him, but I'm not like a diehard fan.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for this one. I'm getting the vibe this might be a little bit more of a thriller than a horror. I don't know why, but I love this idea of how he takes some interesting fact or something about Black history and he revolves a film around it. I had no idea about this history of African-Americans and training horses for Hollywood. That's really unique.
Say in the trailer it's like the one ranch owned by African-Americans or Black-Americans for Hollywood, like for training horses and stuff? Or they said it's like...
It is, but apparently... According to the trailer as well, like the first people to do it were African Americans as well. I believe that's what it says. And so you know they're going to tie into the history of that. Like that's Jordan Peele's bread and butter, that sort of history and social commentary. So it's pretty exciting. It's also great to see him reunite with Daniel Kaluuya. He's an amazing actor, so I'm very excited. My only fear is looking at this is like, I'm still unsure what the threat is. At one point, it looks like
An alien thing or something. Or
I definitely got aliens from this. So
it could be like he's been doing stuff with what was it, the Twilight Zone and all that. I just one scene looked like this big cloud was chasing him. I'm just hoping it's something visible and physical. Any other reactions from other of you guys?
I just wanted to say I love that shot where it's like the girls dancing in the house and then you get like this wide shot of the house and the lights just like turn off abruptly and then you get like Jordan Peele's name just like it's like a 70s horror film. Like Jordan Peele's name just like slowly like comes into the screen like downwards like a scrolling text like a 70s horror film. I love that. I like love that shot. I'm like, I know where he's going.
I feel like Tarantino would... That's the type of idea Tarantino would
come up with. Yeah, but Tarantino gets it off other directors, like from the 70s and stuff like that. It's like almost like Kubrick-ish. So... I don't know. I love that kind of... It's like some of these parts in it, I really, really enjoy it because I could tell Jordan Peele was trying to do like a throwback to films back in that kind of era. So sci-fi and horror type films back in that kind of era. So...
He's so great. He's got such a strong and unique voice. And I love directors where you watch one of their films and you just know who directed it.
Yeah.
Because, like, their personality comes through the directing. And it's something you can't really describe. It, you just feel and see. And I love that. Any other reactions from you, AD,
before we move on? I think the thing that I'm most keen on just straight off the bat is the visual aspect. Just like you said, at least even if you don't enjoy the film, you can definitely appreciate the visual language. And I'm excited about the mysterious force that is behind this and what the hell that plot twist is going to be. I think I'm going to like this a lot more than Us. That one was a bit of a letdown for me. So I'm really keen to see where this goes. I'm also really happy with the cast. Do you guys remember Kiki Palmer from Nickelodeon? She's like the female lead in this. I don't know.
I was never a big Nickelodeon guy. Personally.
I wasn't either.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. But I remember her from Nickelodeon. So I was really excited to see her do something that obviously, like, I don't have this image of her in my head.
When you say Nickelodeon, do you mean like those shows like Drake and Josh and Ned's Declassified and all those kinds of shows?
She had her own show. Oh, okay. It was called True Jackson.
Yeah.
And she's just so funny. And I mean, you can see her bring that comedic element in the beginning of the trailer, which is cool. And then shit hits the fan. Mm. So I'm excited to see her and Barbie Ferreira. I think that's how you say it. She's in Euphoria. She's also in this too. This is the first movie I'm ever going to see her in. So I'm excited for that. Daniel Kaluuya is awesome. And
he's the best.
Yeah, he is. And Steven Yeun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Steven Yeun.
Little Muffin.
Yeah.
So I'm excited
I did not expect to see him in this. That's a little exciting.
So random. Yeah. Like, I just saw all these people and I was like, oh, yes, 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 yes. I'd love to see this. What an ensemble.
He put his head back together after Negan bashed it in.
I heard, I can't remember what it was, but he did a feature about a year or two ago. It came out and I remember it got a lot of hype. It was a thriller. I think it was. I forget what it's called, but or maybe it was a horror. Anyways, apparently it was really good, but I can't remember what it's called. So, yeah. I think my only last hope is I love Jordan Peele, but I feel like Us was a little less focused than Don't Breathe.
Get Out.
Get Out. I was going to say Don't Look Out.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Us was a little bit less focused in its messaging than it was with Get Out. So I'm just hoping he reels it back in a little bit more again. Just, because that's what I really liked about Get Out. And with Us, it felt smart, but because there were like multiple themes, they didn't all tie in together or it wasn't as obvious. And like, maybe call me dumb, but like, I like it when you have a message to a film. I don't want to guess it. I want it to be told clearly to me. Still a great film. I still love Us. I've seen it quite a few times, but yeah. Let's move on. We just talked about Gold last week on the last episode, and we got another Zac Efron film. This time it's based on a Stephen King book. This is from Blumhouse and it's Firestarter.
Yes.
Jesse, what's your reaction to this one?
It looked very interesting. It kind of reminded me of, I haven't seen the movie, but it kind of reminded me of, what's that movie where, Brightburn? Is it Brightburn where the kid's got the,
that's powers, the Superman,
but he's like evil or whatever, one. Or it kind of reminded, me of that. But I think she's the girl in this who's got the power. She's using it more for good, I guess, or she's more.
She doesn't have control. Like, it's something that she was born with.
Oh, okay.
And her dad is trying to protect her.
Which, by the way,
it feels like the opening act to an X-Men movie.
I saw Stephen King, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that standard. I expected like someone Stephen King based on a Stephen King work. And so it gave me like elements of Carrie as well, his first novel.
Yeah.
So it looked really interesting. I'm quite interested. I'm guessing Zac Efron shot this before he shot Gold when he was living in the States. I don't think I've ever seen him in a dad role because. When you think of Zac Efron, you still think of like that young guy, like 20s guy or like early 20s, mid 20s kind of guy. It's just really, I know he's in his mid 30s now, but it's just really weird seeing him in a dad role because he looks so young. So,
yeah, I don't know if I'd buy him as a dad of a girl this old yet. Like, I think he needs another 5 years or so. Like, I know the ages probably work out, but because he's such a pretty boy, and you know, he's such like a model type guy, it makes it less believable. So he needs a few more.
I mean, it's totally impossible he had the kid when he's like, his character had a kid when he's really young or whatever. Like I buy, but it's just really bizarre. Just seeing him in a dad role.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, like you know, there's a reason why you don't see Daniel Radcliffe playing dad roles either. Same sort of situation. We see him as a kid.
Yeah, it's going to take a while.
What do you reckon, AD?
Back in the day, like a really long time ago, I had seen the original one in 1984. Drew Barrymore plays a little girl when she was like 7-ish. It's actually still...
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's still pretty famous. And so that imagery is sort of what I have in my head about this. So when I saw the trailer for this one, it looks really new and polished because obviously, you know, that was like 40 years ago, the original.
Was the original good?
I couldn't even tell you. Like, I'd have to rewatch it. It's been that long. But it's one of her most iconic films as a child for sure. It requires a lot of acting chops because her power is really dangerous and she doesn't know how to control it. And it ends up sort of tearing their lives apart. And it's going to be interesting to see if they keep this as dark, which I hope that they do. I hate when they sort of go for like a PG-13 rating so that more audiences can see it, but at the expense of the material. So,
right. Well, hopefully because it's going to Peacock, hopefully that's less of a concern.
Yeah.
I like to hope that with streaming services, those type of restrictions are a little less restrictive.
So is it coming to streaming services here? Or I'm guessing it's coming to Stan because Stan and Peacock usually do
probably
similar.
You might be right.
Peacock in the US usually goes to Stan in Australia from what I understand. But
there are exceptions, I think, sometimes with those type of deals. But that's what I would assume. There's also sometimes what will happen instead is it will just come to theaters here. Like, for example, Matrix Resurrections.
Mate, you saw that.
The movie is so forgettable. I've already forgotten its name.
I haven't seen it.
It's so forgettable. Even the name is forgettable. That movie, fuck that movie. I assumed it would come to binge because HBO Max movies normally do, but no, that went to theaters. Like, there's some exceptions, and they may think, well, it's Zac Efron and it's Stephen King. It might have a chance, but I would assume, yeah, probably Stan. It looks all right to me. I don't know if this is controversial, but am I crazy for thinking like Stephen King is a bit overrated at this point? Like, no. We're getting a lot of Stephen King movies lately. A lot of them aren't great. And I feel like, yeah, it is a good film. Carrie is a classic. But like,
I have something to say about that. So
what?
Stephen King has often and famously throughout his whole career openly talked about how much he fucking hates 98% of the adaptations of his books. He's only
Are you aware of the one time he did try to direct one of his books as a movie?
Which one was that
one? I think it was Maximum Overdrive, and it's notoriously known as a terrible fucking.
He worked on I think it was he famously hated the original Shining, the Kubrick Shining. And
yeah, and that might be the best one.
And he remade it. He remade it with someone else and no one remembers it. I'm just trying to find it.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't actually. They must have buried another, the shit out of it.
It was a miniseries. So it was a miniseries and he worked on it. And he screenplay. He did the screenplay on it. I don't think anyone remembers it at all.
I didn't even know about it. I knew he directed, I think it was the one about the cars, I think it was called Maximum Overdrive, and it's like notoriously like laughed at as a terrible movie. Because he was like finally, oh, I'm gonna show you how to do it. You always get my books wrong, and then he made just a fucking god awful movie he never directed again.
He's not a director. He's a writer and he's written some of the most incredible horrors of all time. And he's iconic for a reason. I think you just need to have the perfect storm of someone who's able to actually put into visuals his style of writing. Like, if you ever did read like one of his books, I think you would go, okay, like I understand. They're not all perfect,
I don't mean to talk trash on someone who I've never read a single book of his, but from what I understand, like, you know, back in the day, he did a lot of drugs and he would write really fast.
That
like,
does
he'd
not
often
surprise like, me at
well,
all.
He wrote.
Yeah, like, there's a famous interview between him and George R.R. Martin where they interview each other. And, like, you know, he's known, like Stephen King is known for writing really fast. Like, he's putting out like a book a year or sometimes more.
Writes 6 pages a day.
Yeah, right.
How much?
Yeah.
How
and
many?
Then,
he writes 6 pages a day, which is fucking ridiculous as someone who's written a book. That's ridiculous.
But it's also like, is he rewriting? Like, is there a revision process? That's what I'm curious. And George R.R. Martin, it takes him like 6 years to write a book. And I think the first question George R.R. Martin asked Steve King is like, how do you do it? Like, how do you write so fast? And I think that that's the difference, though. It's like, I think with Stephen King, like, maybe he's a naturally talented storyteller, so he can get away with writing 6 pages a day. But doesn't mean every concept's going to be hit and miss. So
no,
I feel like
true.
For every amazing idea, there's like five. Like, oh no, the car's alive. It's going to kill me. That's scary.
He famously wrote Cujo, the novel Cujo, while on drugs. Mm-hmm. And then he later read the book and said it to someone, oh, this is actually pretty good.
Good for him. Good for him.
I don't know how 100% that's true. I've just heard that he wrote the entirety of Cujo while he was on drugs and remembers
that's
nothing
hilarious.
About writing it. And then he read it later and thought it was pretty good. So,
oh my God.
Well, it was probably like the 70s or 80s, right? Like everybody was on drugs, including the publisher, including the editor, including the people who probably drew the cover, you know? So,
oh man, yeah. I think that this is like part of that wave of let's pick things out of the 80s that, you know, are kind of iconic and let's bring them back. I think that's what this movie is trying to do.
Yeah. Shall we move on?
We shall.
Okay, guys, we need to talk about the new Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness trailer. I understand I'm really down the Marvel rabbit hole compared to you guys. I just want to ask you, have either of you heard of any of the rumors or leaks about this film?
I think I've heard a couple. So some people are saying that because, you know, everything's linked to the multiverse, that this opens up a lot of doors to so many other characters. And I did hear about the fact
I want to talk about that. Hold that in because I'm gonna list some stuff.
Go for it.
And I want to get some reactions. So I'm guessing, Jesse, you haven't heard of this. These rumors, these theories, these leaks, have you?
No.
Okay. So I'm gonna pull up a list here. By the way, guys, potential spoilers for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. These are massive spoilers if you don't like to hear about cameos and leaked shit. So move on if you don't want to hear it. Massive spoilers for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. But you may notice in this trailer, there is a shot where Doctor Strange meets a council of people and a bunch of chairs. And you hear an English voice talking, and you see the back of a bald English man's head talking to him.
Yeah, I know.
So according to the rumors and leaks and stuff, this group is Marvel's The Illuminati, who are the smartest people across the multiverse. And supposedly, the bald head person is Patrick Stewart reprising his role as Professor X from the X-Men.
Yep.
Which is kind of a big deal because that's the Fox franchise. But it gets further on from there. Supposedly, the rest of this Illuminati includes the following. Ian McKellen reprising his role as Magneto. A variant of Black Bolt reprised by Anson Mount from The Inhumans. Tenoya Paris, who is Monica Rambeau in WandaVision, except this time she's a variant of Captain Marvel. We've got Hayley Atwell as Captain Carter. For the first time in live action, we have seen an animation. Then Eric Banner returning as Bruce Banner.
Get the fuck out!
Yeah. Iron Grufford returning as Mr. Fantastic. A variant of Mordo, who's Sorcerer Supreme. Bruce Campbell coming in as a new character. Baldur the Brave, who is Thor's half-brother. And maybe the most surprising Tom Cruise as Iron Man from another universe.
Stop. Okay, that theory has been around for years about how, like, well, not even a theory, that they, if they had made the movies earlier, like they had planned, he would have been Iron Man.
So, yeah, in the 90s, I believe, there was a script for an Iron Man film that Stan Lee helped work on, and they apparently were in talks, I think, to get Tom Cruise playing Iron Man. However, guys, that's not all. There are more supposed cameos in this movie, bring the multiverse together, and I've got a list.
Bring it and on.
This may not be accurate, but hear me out, because it gets pretty fucking crazy. This makes No Way Home look like nothing. but here we go. So Aaron Taylor Johnson returns from Age of Ultron as Quicksilver. We get I'm going to skip this. I'm going to save this one to last because that one's pretty crazy. Jessica Alba is back as the Invisible Woman, as well as a CGI version of Michael Chiklis's The Thing. We get we're going through this list here. Hang on, because I want to save one for last. We get universes from the Fox and the Fantastic universe coming in. Sylvie and the cast from Loki. We have also, get ready for this list, okay? Cameos people will be interested in. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt as Mr. Fantastic and the Invisible Woman.
Ooh.
Sophie Turner, Michael Fassbender, James McAvoy, and Alexandra Shipp return as their respective X-Men characters. Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, who is upset that he can't use the F word in this universe. Wesley Snipes returning as Blade. Wow.
That's cool. No
way.
Yeah. Edward Norton's Hulk, not Edward Norton, a CGI version of his.
Are these confirmed or is these rumors?
Nick, these are supposedly a leak.
Oh, okay.
But based off this one shot, it seems to confirm the leak. But they could change anything. There's more though. Nicolas Cage as Ghost Rider, mostly just Flaming Skull, but Cage appears briefly. Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man is seen but no dialogue. Liam Hemsworth playing a variant of Thor, very classic looking. Thomas Jane as a War Machine Punisher combo. The cast of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Hulu's Runaways, Freeform's Cloak and Dagger. A cameo from Robert Downey Jr. In an emotional scene, apparently. And then the big one I've saved for last, it's like, Matt, how can you get bigger, right? Well, we always said Professor X and Magneto here, but the original trilogy X-Men return, Famke Janssen as Jean Grey, Halle Berry as Storm, James Marsden as Cyclops, and yes, Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. And can it get any better? Yes, it can. They are in their original comic book costumes that are yellow and blue. Yeah. Hugh Jackman, after over 10 years, will finally wear a comic-accurate costume.
Oh, my God. Okay, I don't care what anyone is doing. We are going to this midnight screening, and it's going to be the best night of our whole fucking lives. Oh, my God.
What? I'm just saying, like, how could they afford this? Like, these are such expensive actors. It's like they saved the Spider-Man shit for No Way Home. They're like everything else there. And it's technically possible. Disney now own Fox.
They have
good terms with Sony. Mm-hmm. They technically own or have access to the rights for all their characters and all their films now, except they want to distribute a Hulk movie. I think that's the only exception. But they are allowed to use Hulk, so it doesn't matter.
They have been listening to the fans. They've been listening to the forums and the theories and everyone's desires and just making it happen. This is crazy.
I am just noticing right now that I did forget one thing. The Netflix Defenders, I want to see Charlie Cox as Daredevil, motherfuckers. Give me Daredevil, motherfuckers. But yeah, pretty crazy if that's true. I'm guessing most of them are like there for like a split second.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some sort of characters to get in the movie.
Yeah. This leak, there's like a leak breakdown of the script. And some of the characters seem like they have stuff to do in the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, there's just literally a part where it goes, here's a bunch of cameos. So I have a feeling like someone, for example, Nicolas Cage, it's probably just a CGI version with the skull help, skull face. And like for a split second, they cut to him.
Yeah.
And it may not even be actually him. It may be like footage from like the old movie Like in Spider-Man No Way Home, for both Sandman and Lizard, they used footage from old Spider-Man movies and just CGI'd it. It sounds like, for example, Michael Chiklis and Edward Norton didn't return as their characters. They just did the CGI version of them, but that's fine. You don't need to fucking voice everybody. But yeah, so that's why I want to talk about Doctor Strange today, because holy my shit. God.
This is just too much. This is amazing. Yeah,
I'm really excited, but I also wonder, like, what Marvel, like, what do you, you're going to blow your load now? Like, what do you do after this? Like Doctor Strange 3 is going to be fucking shit compared to this movie. Like, how do you do and Sam Raimi's directing this too. That's exciting. Like, yeah.
I don't know. You know what, bro? They manage to surprise us every time. And every time you think maybe this is where the decline's going to come in, it just hasn't hit yet. So, oh boy.
Yeah. I'm really wondering how, because it's only a matter of time till we get a new X-Men. Although I should also say there's a different leak going around saying that Daniel Radcliffe's going to appear as Wolverine. But that's the thing with these leaks. Like, sometimes they're wrong. Yeah. Sometimes they're fake. Sometimes they're speculation. But I read a very similar plot breakdown leak on Spider-Man No Way Home. And it was 100% accurate. Oh, almost 100%. I think it was one part of it that wasn't true. But, like, I was watching the movie. I'm like, oh, I read this online. I forgot that. But I didn't trust the leak when I read it.
Yeah.
But, you know, still Mary Jane scene still hit me like a ton of bricks. Don't get me wrong. Whew. Okay. Let's go on to our last trailer for today.
Yes.
Currently on YouTube. It is number 19 on trending. Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. They, excuse me. They shot, I'm drinking too much alcohol. Sorry, guys. they shot this up in Queensland, down under. I could be wrong, but I believe this is the film that gave Tom Hanks COVID-19.
Yeah. He got it from the set of this film, I think.
Yeah, I've promised my mum and dad I'd go see this with them. They recently just went to an Elvis museum in Mount Druitt.
That is so random. I didn't even know that was there.
Mount Druitt has a Elvis museum.
Oh, yeah, bro. Like a pop-up
or a permanent situation?
Apparently it's been there for a long time.
What a random place to put like a Elvis museum. There's memorabilia
everywhere. I know. You think maybe the city? Nah. Let's put it far out in Western Sydney where people don't hang out. Like, but yeah, good for Mount Druitt for having something not to do with
crime.
I was going to say not to do with drugs, but Elvis died from drugs. So there you go.
Oh my God.
Nah, but what do you guys think of this trailer? You excited? You keen?
Yeah.
You can go first, Jesse. I want to hear what you have to
say. Oh yeah, look, it looked really good. Like Austin Butler looks like he's nailed the voice and mannerisms of Elvis. Looked very Baz Luhrmann-y, glitz, glamour, stylish, you know, what Baz Luhrmann's always renowned for. It was great to see Tom Hanks in there. He looks like he's playing someone different than Tom Hanks, like not using the Tom Hanks voice. And yeah, it looked actually really, really good. So I'm very interested, and I'm very shocked by how American they've made it, considering it was all shot in Queensland. It looks so American, like all the locations and stuff.
Excellent point,
dude. Mm-hmm. They're getting good at it, but keep in mind a lot of the stuff does look like it's indoors, so it's not that.
Oh, there's some outside exterior shots. Hard to look amazing. Unless they just film those in America.
They're getting good at that shit.
Yeah.
They're getting good at that shit, man. They really are. You mentioned Tom Hanks's accent. Does anyone know what the fuck is going on with that accent? Because that's a weird accent. What nationality is that? Do you know?
American. Does anyone know? He's like a Southern American.
Really?
Yeah. So the colonel was Elvis's manager, who basically also became, Elvis was like his slave essentially. And
right.
He's American.
I did not realize. What do you reckon of this 80?
Actually hang on one second. Let me just quickly go back on that fact. I know he wasn't born in the States, but I think his accent is a combo of like Louisiana. I thought it
was like European or something.
Yeah, it's like that Southern Louisiana style accent with like a European influence. You are correct there. Okay. That's why it's weird.
It took me off guard. That's not what I expected to hear from Tom Hanks, you know?
Yeah. It's really refreshing to hear him do something so different after such a long time. I mean, he's iconic for his voice anyway, and who doesn't love Tom Hanks's voice? But I'm very, very keen to see him play someone so evil. The Colonel ruined his life and is basically responsible for all of his depression, drugs, and substance abuse. He banned him from ever leaving the United States, which is why Elvis loved Hawaii so much, because it was basically the furthest away he was ever allowed to travel. I think this movie is going to make me cry. It's going to make me want to reach out and give him the biggest hug ever. But I think the cast is going to do a phenomenal job, and I love Baz Luhrmann. This really gives me that Moulin Rouge, Romeo and Juliet feeling.
Yeah.
So if it's going to feel like another part to that trilogy now, I'm so excited. Cannot wait.
It does have that vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to, when I was a kid, like, my mum was obsessed with Elvis. She always say something like, oh, they used to call him Elvis the Pelvis because he's always shaking his leg and stuff and thrusting his hips. And I was always kind of like, yeah, whatever. I didn't see it. Like, I listen to rock music. Everyone's doing backflips and stuff. Like, when I see this trailer, like, I get it. Like, you know what? I'm not even ashamed to say it. This dude is so fuckable. Like, this is a sexy trailer. Like, the way he's moving and everyone's got their hands all over him. Like, I get the appeal now. Like, but when I think of Elvis, I think of late stage Elvis, where like all the people who impersonate Elvis. So I always feel like these like guys are kind of a bit overweight, kind of a bit out of shape. But this is like a young, sexy Elvis, and I'm digging it, man. I'm actually, it looks exciting too.
One day, just watch Jailhouse Rock, and you will question, you know, yourself highly. Okay. He is so beautiful. I grew up watching Elvis movies because, similarly, my mum, whose mum was not obsessed with Elvis. I mean, you know, crazy. But, oh, man, I'm very excited. I think Austin Butler is going to be amazing. He's really, really talented. And this is going to, I'm not going to be surprised if they get Oscar nods for this either.
Yeah. Look, Baz Luhrmann is a director who, you know, he's one of them guys, you know, so.
One of them guys.
Anyways, I think that's it for us today with our trailers. It is time to go into our film discussions. Let's rock and roll. Spoiler alert. The following film discussions will contain spoilers. Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Being the Ricardos. If you don't want to be spoiled, please check the time codes in the description below. This is your spoiler warning. You've been warned. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is out now on Netflix. Do you guys mind if I kick this one off?
Go for it.
Normally I'd throw it to you, but woo! This movie is crazy. It is bonkers. So look, starting off with the positives, it is such a great, gory, bloody horror film. This is how I want slashers to be. I love the over-the-top blood and gore. The practical blood over CGI blood is always a bonus, and I love the practical use of all that. It was great. I think the horror scenes are pretty well directed as well. The compliments end there, though, because holy fuck, this script, I don't know about you guys, is insane to me. It is about a bunch of influencers who buy an entire town in the deep south.
Yeah.
What the fuck? And then sell it to auction. None of this shit seems plausible. And then on top of that, you've got a returning character from the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but she's not played by the original actress because she sadly passed away. So, this is a great way to honor her legacy. Nope. She's barely in the movie. She gets killed off in such an unceremonious way. It just makes you go, what was the point of all that? In a way, it seems a little bit disrespectful also. And then on top of that, probably some of the most bonkers shit is there's some political commentary in this movie. At least I think it is, because I can't tell what the fuck whose side they're on. The first like 20 minutes is filled with, oh, look, they're these woke influencers who are always talking about climate change and Black Lives Matter, and they openly judge people to their face for using cars that drive diesel. And then it's like they're all young and pretty, while the people from the South are like old and dirty. So it feels kind of like it leans that way. But then it constantly seems to be like making fun of them. So it's like, I can't tell if this director like left wing or right wing? I don't know. It seems like it's trying to throw in all these political themes, but they have nothing to do with the fucking story, which is a mind fuck. Could say, why'd you waste half the film on that shit? And I'm just there like, wow. Like that one joke where the guy that's like tries to film Leatherface. He's like, try anything, you're canceled, bro. Like, that was funny, but that's all I got. Are you guys in the same boat with me? Like, how do you feel about this movie? Holy shit.
It was garbage. Just trash. Absolute trash. I actually, do you know what? Because like, I do like the original Texas Chainsaw. I think that's a really well-made film. The rest of it, just forget it. The rest is garbage. This is garbage as well. It tried to pull a Halloween 2018, but trying to retcon all the other sequels, but it just was far worse than Halloween 2018. I do like the fact that they bring back. Bring back the final girl, like they did with Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween 2018. They bring back the final survivor. I love that, even though it's gonna become a bit cliche now. But I still love that, to face against the killer again. But Sally was just fucking wasted in this movie. Honestly, she's fucking wasted. And just what to just kill her? Just like.
She has like three scenes. Why is she not the main character? It should be her story.
I
just feel like
they fucking wasted her. And the whole, I actually timed how long it would take until Leatherface would start his killing spree. It was 15 minutes from the beginning of the movie. 15 minutes before he starts killing people. And before the first young person is killed.
Look, the only good thing about this movie is the kills. So honestly, I know it means it's like it's for a sacrifice for some story and character building, but thank God for that at least, because that was the only redeeming factor for me,
just,
honestly.
Oh, man, the gore was good. That's about it. I hated the characters, all the characters, like the influencer young people. You didn't know anything about them except they were vapid and ignorant.
Annoying.
And I just did not give a fuck about them. The one scene I did like, The one scene I did like is when the two sisters do like the automatic, because both of you haven't seen the original Texas Chainsaw, have you?
No.
So the very final shot of the original Texas Chainsaw is Sally, the final girl, she escapes from the Sawyer family house and she gets into a pickup. She's covered in blood. She gets in a pickup and the pickup guy takes off, and the shots of her in the desert in like the afternoon, and she's like screaming with like, she's scared, but she's also excited she got away. And it's like this weird scream that just combines all these different emotions together. And then Leatherface is like swinging around the chainsaw in anger with the Texas background. Mm. And it's like one of the most iconic horror scenes of all time. And I like the fact that they try to kind of do it here as well. Like they had the sister, except the sister, because it's like new technology nowadays, the car drives by itself, and the sister it's the exact same frame. Yeah, it's the exact same framing shot. Yeah. Like Sally in the original film, and it's the younger sister, and she's screaming looking back as Leatherface chops off her sister's head and like does the same like weird like movements with the chainsaw in the head. And so I like that part, but the rest of it is just fucking garbage. So
what about you, Adi? You got any thoughts, comments?
Yeah, I've got a few.
I know we've been pretty savage as it is. You're allowed to say nice things if you want, but yeah.
Okay, I'll start off with nice things like you did. I actually quite liked the cinematography. I thought there were some really cool shots.
Yes.
And it looked pretty high quality. My favorite shot of the film was when she lifts up the chainsaw at the end. She's like, and then she like swipes him. I thought that was really cool. And you make an excellent point. The gore was very realistic. Loved the practical. That made me want to puke most of the time, because I don't like movies like this. I never go out of my way to watch them ever because they make me physically sick. But they succeeded in that arena. Like, I literally wanted to hurl most of the time. So that was really good. I loved, what's her name? Sarah Yarkin, who played Melody. I thought her performance was very strong. I really liked her acting in the film. And then I guess, yeah, never ever going to watch it again. Can't say I cared for it. Didn't really have any emotional attachment to it. I wasn't really on the edge of my seat either. It was just sort of, I don't know. I think, yeah, the script was just weird and hollow for a lot of it. And you do get mixed messages. You're like, what are you trying to say? Like, I don't understand what's going on.
I didn't even get the political messaging that you were talking about, Matt. Honestly, I get it. Like, they think,
they're setting something up and they didn't do anything with it. Like, it was such, many of the characters were tied to stereotypes. And a lot of them, which could be seen as political stuff. And I'm like, that's cool. The Hunt did that. And it didn't do it well, but attempted something.
I liked The Hunt.
So I was expecting something like that.
Like,
me too. And I don't really like The Hunt that much, but it was way, at least they successfully achieved what they were trying to do. This movie, I feel like they were trying to set up some plot threads that just didn't pay off. Like, they spent like 10 minutes of screen time trying to get rid of a Confederate flag. And for what? It didn't tell us anything or do anything. I don't get someone into a house.
This film was like,
it was bizarre.
It was like being invited to a birthday party and not getting cake at the end. And you're like, what the fuck? At least you could have given me the cake. There was none.
Yeah.
Well,
here's what I'd say about this film. It's not a great movie, but it will make a very excellent kills compilation on YouTube.
Yeah. So, that's a good way to put it.
I feel like, look, it was shot well. It had good cinematography. It had good blood. It had good kills. The horror suspense moments were actually pretty good. Just the
story was weak. The
script and characters was just really not there. Mm. Not only was it just not there, but it was just also very weird and bizarre. I read an amazing trivia thing on IMDb, which actually I think has been taken down. I can't see it now.
Oh.
But, I see it here, but they've reworded it to be nicer. But the original one said, if I remember correctly, it said it was sold to Netflix. Legendary sold it to Netflix after a string of disastrous test screenings. It said disastrous test screenings. And also there was another one saying it was the first Hollywood film to have a test screening during COVID-19.
Okay.
But now the actual IMDb now says it much nicer. It's like, oh, it's slated for a theatrical release, but then it was sold.
And that's that's exactly where it should be.
Yeah. Happen.
And Netflix, and then forgotten forever.
The thing about Netflix is a lot of the Netflix exclusives are the equivalent of director VOD, really dumpster garbage bin movies. Like, sometimes they get a big actor. But a lot of the ones that are exclusively on Netflix, there's a reason why it's there. It's because it wasn't good enough for cinemas, unfortunately. Any other thoughts or comments on this?
I just agree with you that I did like some of the cinematography, like shots. Like the shots after Leatherface gets out of the ambulance and he's walking through the field, I thought that was pretty cool. It's just, just a garbage script and a garbage, didn't know fucking shit all about the characters. You know, they started killing them off 15 minutes in. You didn't care about them. There was nothing to them.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Amen to that.
All right, cool. cool. All right, and last but not least today, 80 saw Bean and Ricardo's. We're a little bit strapped for time today, so we're going to make it a quick one. But 80, give us your opinion on Bean and Ricardo's.
So Bean the Ricardo's, set in 1952, and it looks at the relationship of the power couple that was Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, right into the lead up of them just becoming, two of the most iconic TV couples in all of history, smashing records. The performances are incredible. As always, Javier Bardem and Nicole Hitmen always nail everything that they do, and you feel the chemistry between them. I feel like while I was watching them, it would have been what it was actually like to watch Lucy and Desi. She really just physically embodied her to a T, which is obviously why she's been nominated for an Academy as well as he. And I actually found that some people said that it was a bit slow. I really thought the pacing was quite perfect and actually built up slowly, bit by bit, right up until the end. It was emotionally charged. It was just a really interesting insight into the how toxic Hollywood was to her, and even Desi, he did not treat her very well. They had a really, I don't know, it was a roller coaster of a relationship, but she is iconic and such a powerhouse, and the things that she did with her career and the way she changed Hollywood in terms of a feminine power was incredible. I think that Aaron Sorkin, the director, did an amazing job. He recently did Trial of Chicago 7, and he's done Molly's Game.
So good.
So good. Yeah. He really brought the drama out of, you know, two of comedy's most iconic people in Hollywood history. So I would highly rate this film.
Definitely iconic. And just to tie things back to the start, it's actually, I've heard a lot of people being surprised that Being the Ricardos didn't get more Oscar noms than it did. But it got a couple, though, so good.
I think
on it
got what it deserved, like very, very much so.
That's cool. All right, well, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap things up there today, guys, because we are short for time. But yeah, thank you so much for hanging out with Upcoming Attractions. For more, be sure to follow us on social media. Highlights posted to TikTok almost daily. At least we try to. And then be sure to follow us Facebook and Instagram as well. Help us out on Instagram. Please give us a follow. We are so close to hitting a milestone there. And we'd really appreciate the support. Also, if you want to support the show, give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you can. And be sure to listen to us on Spotify, iTunes, or watch us on our YouTube channel. That's it for us today. Hope you had a good time. I know we did. I'm Matt. That's Jesse and 80. Until next time.
Bye, guys.
Ladies.